Welcome to Royally Screwed. My name is Chris Shearer, and it's my honor to take you on a tour through some of history's greatest, worst, and bizarre rulers. In this episode, we're exploring the life of Rollo, a figure from the Viking era that would go on to be the ancestor of the ethnic group known as the Normans. I've mentioned the Normans a few times throughout this podcast, as they were a very important people in the medieval era that would go on to conquer several nations, including the island of Sicily and, most notably, England. Rollo himself is a semi-mysterious figure. His origins are almost completely unknown, though historical records prove his existence once he really gets up and going with his Viking shenanigans. Shenanigans here meaning terrorizing Western France. While we'll mainly be focusing on Rollo's misadventures in France, well, it was actually the Kingdom of West Francia, if we're being specific, we will also have to look at how the descendants of Rollo will go on to shape Europe in the centuries following his death. However, we'll also have to look at how the Vikings even decided to go about harassing Francia in the first place. But this is in fact an episode about Rollo, and he's a fairly interesting guy due to the fact that we know he existed. The sagas of the medieval Norse are very difficult to parse as legitimate history at times. While figures may have existed, their deeds are made legendary to such a degree that it becomes next to impossible to figure out if the person behind the legend ever actually existed, a la the Norse king Ragnar Lothbrok, or which of the dozen men who had the same name the story was even about. While there are mentions of Rollo in the sagas, even if it might be possibly oblique references, his footprint in history was definitely real. So, how does a warrior from Scandinavia go on to become one of the greatest influencing factors of the medieval world? Well, you'll just have to listen through to find out. So, without further ado, let's begin the story. We're going back in time to the Kingdom of West Francia in the late 9th century in the Northman. In the background history lesson of this episode, we have to talk about Vikings because, surprisingly, in the almost 80 episodes of this show, several of which have included Vikings as a major part, I haven't actually done any sort of background information about them. But everyone knows who the Vikings were, right? They're so popular that they have just become a stock archetype character in media. Heck, there were Vikings in at least one episode of SpongeBob SquarePants. But it's because of the predominant portrayals of Vikings in media that we've been driven down a path where the figures we think of as Vikings are not actually a very good representation of who the Vikings were. If you are keeping up with modern information about Vikings, then you probably know that historians have been trying to cast off a lot of preconceptions about Vikings because, surprise, surprise, they're actually fairly racist and rely very heavily on nationalistic ideologies. So, no horned helmets and no Conan the Barbarian-like figures against the small, weak, helpless Europeans. So, who were the Vikings? Well, first we should find out what Viking means. There are two theories about the etymology of the word Viking, one that comes from Old Norse and one from Old English. Obviously, you would immediately think that the word Viking would come from the Norse themselves, though that might not necessarily be the case. In Old Norse, there was the word vík, meaning creek or inlet, which could actually refer to fjords. In this case, Viking could technically mean something like people of the fjords, but grew to gain the meaning of sea rover. However, evidence shows that the Old English word víking predates any Norse mention of víkingr by a few centuries, with víking meaning village or camp, referencing the temporary camps Vikings set up during their raids. So, yeah, it's all a bit confusing. The actual Vikings themselves were just pirates from Northern Europe who raided all across the continent, from Ireland all the way to Constantinople, starting in the late 8th century up to the mid-11th century. One of the theories behind the rise of the Viking raids actually comes from the expansion of the Frankish kingdom under Charlemagne, something I've covered in this podcast and also a theory I ascribe to. Granted, you can find some Viking activity in Francia before Charlemagne's push north. The culture and imperial expansion Charlemagne brought to the borders of Scandinavia was unlike anything the people living in Northern Europe had had to deal with, possibly ever. With it being clear that southern influences, like Christianity and larger unified kingdoms, were trying to make massive headway in Scandinavia, it only made sense that certain people would try to keep hold of their culture, even if it meant leaving their nations to find a safe space somewhere else. Unfortunately, a lot of that land was occupied by the same types of people the Scandinavian sailors hated, the new culture threatening their homeland. But also, well, there was plenty of gold to get from the Christian monasteries in the lands outside of Scandinavia. Yeah, I'm not going to try to paint the Vikings as righteous pagans fighting against the oncoming steel grip of Christianity. Was that a factor for some? Maybe. But Vikings were pirates at the end of the day, and gold is gold. Eventually, you had larger and larger raids appear across Europe. The temporary settlements they set up during these raids started to become a bit less temporary until you eventually had people from Scandinavia living alongside the same people they had been raiding not too long ago. And for the most part, the Vikings, who may have started doing this whole thing for cultural reasons, were assimilating to the culture of the very people they had attacked. Viking raids had started in Francia, the Germanic kingdom of the Franks that flourished after the fall of Rome, towards the tail end of Charlemagne's rule. Under his rule and the rule of his son Louis the Pious, Francia was mostly able to keep the northern raiders at bay. Francia as a nation was relatively strong, had to be considering it covered about a third of continental Europe. But things changed when Louis's three oldest sons were essentially made co-rulers of the nation. Francia became weak and fell into civil war. The kingdom would soon collapse, and the Vikings were all too keen to take advantage of that. We're going to begin our story possibly before Rollo was even born. We'll get to that after this prologue of sorts. In 843, three grandsons of Charlemagne, Lothair, Louis the German, and Charles the Bald, signed the Treaty of Verdun, which resulted in the Frankish kingdom being split into three pieces, with each man ruling over a section as its new emperor. Very heavy air quotes there. Charles was given West Francia, which corresponded to most of what is modern-day France. Well, just 2 years after the signing of the Treaty of Verdun, a massive fleet of Vikings decided it was a great time to attack the western shores of Europe, aka West Francia. The fleet was said to be around 120 ships, altogether holding over 5,000 Viking warriors ready to pillage. The leader of this Viking raid is recorded as a man named Regan Harris. This is probably a Francicized or Latinized version of his actual name. This has led to the theory that Regan Harris's identity was actually that of the semi-legendary Viking king Ragnar Lodbrok. According to the legends of Ragnar, King Charles had gifted the Viking leader with the land that is now the city of Torhout in Belgium, but Ragnar eventually lost favor with the king and had his rights to the land revoked. That would certainly explain why Ragnar was bearing down on West Francia with that many men. They traveled into Francia via the Seine River, first sacking the city of Rouen. Charles was certain that the Vikings' goal was the Abbey of Saint-Denis, which also happened to be near the not unimportant city of Paris. Now, it should be noted here that Paris was not the capital of West Francia. It would not become the capital of France until over a century later. But still, it was a fairly important city and located near an important religious center. Charles ordered two separate military groups to guard the Seine, one on each bank of the river. Well, the Vikings weren't stopped by this pincer-esque maneuver. Ragnar's group took over 100 soldiers prisoner and hung them. The fleet arrived in Paris on the 29th of March, Easter Sunday. They sacked the city and took control. When it was clear that the Franks would not be able to retake the city from the Viking raiders, King Charles decided to offer the invaders a very large sum of money to protect the city from further destruction. Ragnar's fleet sailed away with over 5,600 pounds of silver and gold. They still sacked several other locations on their way back home, though. But this would be far from the last time raiders from the north decided to attack the future capital of France. It would be far from the last time Vikings would run rampant in Francia. However, it was the beginning of the Norse people's long history with a nation they would soon come to call home. As I alluded to earlier, we don't know when Rollo was born. Different historians have thrown out dates between 835 and 870 CE, which is a very large gap. We also don't know where he was born, not a city or a country. The two main candidates for the birthplace of Rollo are Denmark and Norway, which tracks because those were the two main nations the Vikings hailed from. For most medieval citizens of Europe, any term implying someone was a Viking from Scandinavia were all considered synonyms, even if they weren't. This means you might be calling someone a Dane when they were really from Norway. Norse and Norwegian meant the same thing back then, when a Norse person could also be someone from Denmark or Sweden. The most reductive yet all-encompassing term that could be applied to someone like Rollo would be Northman, which is essentially what Norse also means. According to a biography commissioned by Rollo's grandson, he was recorded as having been born in Denmark. A couple centuries after Rollo's death, historians were writing that he was from Norway. I feel like I'd rather side with Rollo's own family, though, if we're trying to pick a side here. According to the biography by historian Dudo, the biography commissioned by Rollo's grandson, Rollo was known as Rollo the Walker. This nickname was apparently given to him because Rollo was so tall and large that he couldn't properly fit on a normal horse and had to walk alongside the rest of the Vikings he sailed with. He may have also been the son of Danish nobility, but again, we can't say that for certain. Rollo's early days would also correspond with the rise of King Harald I of Norway, the first king of Norway who was said to have united the nation under one ruler. Now, a lot of Harald's life is also uncertain, as the earliest records we have of him were written a few centuries after his rule, and it's all listed in the numerous sagas. However, let's say that Harald was in fact a 100% real ruler who decided to unite Norway under one king. What does that mean for the other lesser nobility? Well, some of those guys certainly didn't want to serve under the rule of a king. And with nowhere to call home in Norway, if Rollo was from Norway or if he was just active in Norway during this time, a man like Rollo would need to find a place for himself somewhere else. This was also during a time when it was clear that if you couldn't cut it as a noble under a Scandinavian king, you could kinda just go raiding down the rivers of mainland Europe and make a solid life that way. And hey, if Ragnar Lothbrok, again with the caveat if he existed, could be given land in the Frankish kingdom after Viking too much, maybe that was a good place to go pillaging. And whether Rollo knew it or not, his Viking activities beginning in the 870s would see him become one of the most important men in West Francia. In 876, Rollo is recorded as invading the city of Rouen. He went to war with a local noble named Robert, who was head of the Breton March, the borderlands of West Francia and the region of Brittany in modern-day northwestern France. Robert's forces would go on to almost destroy the regions in the hopes of pushing the Vikings out of northern France. In order to settle things somewhat peacefully, Rollo was apparently given land somewhere along the northern coast of West Francia, which could have been anywhere in modern-day France, Belgium, or even the Netherlands. It's believed, though, that Rollo was also living in Britain during this time. In the newly burgeoning England, okay, it wasn't quite England yet, the great heathen army was causing all sorts of trouble the other Vikings could join in on. The Great Heathen Army was a large army of Vikings who invaded Britain in the mid-9th century in the hopes of conquering the kingdoms of the Anglo-Saxons for themselves. It was also led by several men who proclaimed to be the sons of Ragnar Lothbrok, though it's very much up to debate still as to whether they were actually related at all. So while Rollo wasn't off raiding the rivers of Francia, he was no doubt still up to no good across the British Channel. It was written by Dudo that during his time in Britain, Rollo befriended King Athelstan of East Anglia. Athelstan had once been a Viking leader named Guthrum who had been forced to convert to Christianity after his defeat against King Alfred of Wessex, the southernmost kingdom of Anglo-Saxon Britain. Rollo's friendship with Athelstan is an interesting one, as will become more apparent as the episode goes on, because the two men would run somewhat parallel lives, just in different nations. However, it was no doubt helpful to have a powerful ally to supply you with resources you could use to sack the next country over. And sack Francia Rollo would, because something very major was just around the corner for our plucky Viking warlord. Possibly like the legendary Ragnar a generation beforehand, Rollo and a few others once more set their sights on Paris in a move that would shake Francia to its core. The king of West Francia at this point in time was a man known as Charles the Fat. Charles ruled during a very interesting period of post-Charlemagne Francia. Despite our story taking place in West Francia, Charles was originally the king of East Francia. Well, actually, East Francia had further fractured, and Charles only ruled over the northern portion situated in modern-day Germany. However, his brother, who was the king of Italy, died in 882, and Charles inherited Italy and reunited the East. In 884, Charles's cousin, King Carloman of West Francia, passed away and Charles again inherited that throne. Therefore, in just a few years, Charles had gone from ruling over a fractured piece of land to the entire empire established by his great-grandfather Charlemagne, the first time it had been whole in about 40 years. In 882, Charles had been forced to deal with a group of Vikings who had formed a somewhat major encampment near the city of Asselt in the Netherlands near the Rhine River, which would have been in his territory of East Francia. One of the Viking leaders of this camp was a man named Siegfried. He'll be important later. Maybe. Okay, there'll be a guy named Siegfried later, but I couldn't tell you if he's the same Siegfried as this one or not. Anyways, Charles approached with a massive army and laid siege to the Vikings' camp. The Frankish army managed to beat the Vikings into submission. Siegfried was bribed to stop raiding, and one of his co-leaders converted to Christianity. Well, in 885, Siegfried decided to once more return to the art of Viking. By this point, Rollo had joined up with the other Viking leader. With around 300 ships and possibly up to 40,000 Vikings, that number is no doubt grossly exaggerated by historical sources, Siegfried and Rollo sailed down the Seine River to Paris. No matter what the actual numbers were, it was said that this was the largest Viking raid to have been held up to that point in history. In their minds, even if they couldn't take the city themselves, Charles would no doubt offer a hefty sum of gold and silver for the Vikings to give up. Frankish soldiers attempted to stop the massive fleet, but Siegfried and Rollo managed to push towards the city. In the 9th century, Paris was isolated to the Île de la Cité, an island in the middle of the Seine. It was also ruled over by the Count of Paris, Otto of House Robertian. Due to the city's island nature and its walls, it was in a fairly good spot to deal with an invasion, even if that invasion came from the water. However, Odo was said to have far less soldiers than there were Vikings, maybe as low as 200 men. The Vikings arrived in late November and demanded Odo pay tribute to them. When the Count of Paris denied the request, Siegfried and Rollo's forces laid siege to the island. After 2 days of fighting, in which it's said that even the Bishop of Paris joined in to protect the city, the Viking army was forced to step back and set up a camp so they could continue the siege. The fortifications of Paris had proved stronger than they'd thought. Over the next couple months, the Vikings continued plans in an attempt to at least take one of the bridge towers that guarded the city. They tried blocking off the river and sending fireships, ships literally lit on fire to use as just a burning smash attack, but neither of these strategies worked. Even siege engines proved useless. Otto sent word to Charles in Italy, and the Emperor eventually sent reinforcements. However, marching through winter, the reinforcements were not able to repel the Viking siege. In April of 886, Siegfried recognized that his own troops were low on morale and decided to leave. He requested 60 pounds of silver, which he was given, and sailed off. But Rollo remained. Once more, Otto asked Charles for assistance, and this time the Count of Paris himself snuck out of the city past Rollo's army. He received more soldiers from the Emperor and returned, this time fighting through the Viking army to reach the Paris gates. The Parisians managed to fend off the Vikings, forcing them to retreat into a siege once more. In October, Emperor Charles arrived outside of Paris with an army. Rollo's army was forced to retreat, laying off the siege. Charles allowed the Vikings to leave, where they would go on to sack the kingdom of Burgundy in eastern France, which at this point in time was revolting against Charles. When Rollo's army finally called off their Viking activities in 887, Charles paid off the army with over 500 pounds of silver. Not bad for a failed siege. The next year, in 888, Charles the Fat died. Due to his heroism in the Siege of Paris, Otto was elected as the new king of West Francia, briefly breaking the Carolingian dynasty's hold on West Francia. Oh yeah, the empire also split apart again. Otto would rule for a decade until he passed away. He was succeeded by yet another Charles, and once again, this Charles would have to deal with Rollo. Rollo wouldn't show up again in history until 911 CE, and it's at this point that any historian saying Rollo was born sometime before 860 is probably a bit off base, because with the earliest estimates being 835, Rollo would be in his mid-70s by this point. Also, yeah, he probably did actually begin being a Viking when he was a bit younger, so that's why he could begin stuff in 876. We're also about to get into another large-scale raid. I don't think he'd be doing that as a senior citizen. Granted, maybe he was just weird and really fit for an old guy. Anyways, in 911 CE, Rollo once more gathered a raiding party in order to take the city of Chartres in north-central France. Chartres had previously been razed during a Viking raid several decades back in the year 858. In the ensuing years, it was transformed into a heavily fortified city that would hopefully be able to avoid the fate that had previously befallen it. Well, Rollo would make an attempt to once more repeat fate. In spring of 911, Rollo sailed down the Jura River and started attacking the region surrounding Chartres in order to deprive the city of outside resources. Once the surrounding land was burned and Chartres was well and truly isolated, Rollo's army laid siege to the city. Unfortunately, the strong walls surrounding the city held firm. For several months, the siege continued until Chartres received aid from a relieving army. One of the leaders of this army was Robert, brother to the deceased King Otto, formerly of Count of Paris fame. Fun fact, Robert would later go on to be crowned King of West Francia. Robert's army caused enough problems for Rollo that the forces from within Chartres were able to come out and attack the Vikings from the other side. There's also a weird legend surrounding the Siege of Chartres that says the local bishop climbed up onto the walls and waved a tunic said to belong to the Virgin Mary. When the Vikings tried shooting it, they were all blinded. So there's that. Anyways, sandwiched between Robert's army and the soldiers of Chartres, it was clear that Rollo's army would not be coming out with a victory. In fact, it's said that Rollo fully fled the battle before he could be captured or killed. He and a small handful of Vikings managed to escape and sailed back to the city of Rouen. In the aftermath of the Vikings' defeat, the government of West Francia, and particularly the clergy of the kingdom, decided it was as excellent a time as ever to attempt peace with Rollo's gang. King Charles III, also known as Charles the Simple, decided to approach Rollo with a treaty that would change the face of Francia. Despite his defeat, Rollo was still a well-renowned and powerful Viking warlord. If Charles and West Francia could get that strength on their side, they would be much better off against the constant onslaught of northerners who seemed to want to pillage West Francia to death. Rollo was, for what it's worth, willing to meet with Charles to discuss what a partnership would look like. In the initial offer, Charles offered Rollo the region of Flanders and modern-day Belgium. Rollo was unsatisfied with the offer, as he considered the land unfit for the agrarian society his people desired. Charles then decided that Rollo might as well have the land he was basically already ruling, a section of northern Francia between the Epte River and the English Channel, a section of land containing the city of Rouen, Rollo's first big break in Francia. He was also given rule over Brittany, a region Francia still technically had very little control over. This section of land, which Rollo was now the Duke of, would be called Normandy, after the Frankish term for Northman. As a part of the treaty, Rollo and his men would have to convert to Christianity. And it's with that conversion where his name would actually become Rollo. It's theorized that maybe Rollo is a Latinization of the name Hrolfr. But with a chunk of land to call his own, as well as Charles's daughter Gisela as his new bride, Rollo was able to finally settle down. He had found his new life as Duke of the Normans. Rollo passed away sometime between 928, in which he is mentioned as being alive by a Frankish chronicler, and 933, when the Normans were given a new patch of land, though the leader of Normandy at this point is listed as Rollo's son William. However, Normandy's history was only just beginning. True to the Treaty of Saint-Clair-sur-Epte, the treaty between Rollo and Charles that created the Duchy of Normandy, the Scandinavian settlers in the territory lived as loyal vassals of the Frankish kings. In fact, after enough time passed, the Scandinavians were basically just Frankish people speaking a slightly different dialect of the language of Francia that is still spoken in the region of Normandy and France. The nobility of the Normans soon began intermarrying with the Frankish nobility, even further cementing them as a permanent ethnic group within the area we now call France. The Normans were known for their great fighting spirit as descendants of Vikings, and their staunch advocacy to Catholicism, following in the footsteps of Rollo. When a group of Normans making a pilgrimage to Jerusalem in 999 stopped in Italy on the return voyage, they stopped a pirate attack. The local prince asked the Normans if they could stay as a permanent fixture in southern Italy. While that group of Normans politely declined, they spread word of this encounter back in Normandy, and some people ended up taking the offer. In 1016, yet another group of Normans fended off a group of Byzantine soldiers looking to enforce Eastern Roman rule. Over the next few years, Norman families were given titles of nobility in southern Italy. The Normans of Italy would soon gain enough power and military control that they conquered the islands of Sicily and Malta from local Muslim Arabic control in the 12th century. Sicily was an especially noteworthy case because it already had a strong mix of Italian, Byzantine Greek, and Arabic influence. The Normans allowed its culture to continue, now adding in the French feudal influences from back home. Norman Sicily was a hotbed for religious freedom and cultural expression. Many Norman castles can still be found there. The Normans also pushed further east, both against and alongside the Byzantine Empire. These Normans pushed all the way down into Syria on military campaigns in service of the Byzantine emperors, mostly against local Turkish and other Muslim rulers. From the late 11th to late 12th centuries, you also started seeing Byzantine nobility being able to trace their family trees back to Norman mercenaries hired out by the Empire. There are some who question how much Norman these mercenaries were, though. Some historians think that terms like Norman and Frankish became synonyms for each other, instead of the Normans being an ethnic group within the greater Frankish kingdom. In the centuries following Rollo's death, the Normans would step foot in almost every piece of land surrounding the Mediterranean Sea. As I mentioned, they set up shop in Italy, Greece, and Turkey. They were also important mercenaries for both Francia and the Pope against the Muslim rule in the Iberian Peninsula. For a couple decades in the 12th century, the Normans of Sicily held land on the North African coast in modern-day Tunisia and Algeria. They even managed to make it out to the Canary Islands off the west coast of Africa in the 15th century. And also, you know that an ethnic group that became renowned for its battle prowess got all up in the Crusades. They came out in such high numbers that some historical works just refer to the Europeans as a whole as the Franks. But Norman influence would most notably be felt not in the Middle East, in Africa, or on continental Europe. Perhaps some of the most important contributions the Normans made to history, at least in my opinion, were felt on the British Isles. In 1066, the Duke of the Normans, Rollo's great-great-great-grandson William II, crossed the English Channel and conquered England. The Normans and the English had a relationship dating back before the Duchy of Normandy even existed. After all, Rollo almost certainly took part in Viking raids on the island of Great Britain. English nobility had married the Norman nobility. Rollo was given Normandy so he could protect Francia from Vikings from the island, as well as possible English attacks too. Well, William II, more commonly called William the Conqueror, changed the landscape of England. The Anglo-Saxon ruling class was pushed to the side in favor of the Normans. These nobles spoke the Norman dialect of French. Seeing this as a prestige tongue, the Anglo-Saxons, who spoke the very Germanic language we now call Old English, started incorporating Norman words and Romance language features into their everyday language. This resulted in a shift from Old English, which is unrecognizable as English to us modern-day speakers, into Middle English, the type of English you would read in Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. So yeah, thanks to Rollo failing to seize the city of Chartres in 911 CE, we now have English as the strange language it is recognized as by many linguists and annoyed second language users. Of course, the English language is not the most important cultural achievement of the Normans, but without it, I would be speaking a completely different language. The Anglo-Normans themselves were also ready to continue on with the bloody battled history of their ancestors, making headway through the rest of Britain and Scotland and Wales. They would even go on to conquer sections of Ireland. So yeah, the Vikings were much more than just raiders. When you follow the story of figures like Rollo, you also find that they helped pioneer cultural changes throughout multiple continents. The next time you say words like chivalry, council, or even bacon, remember that you wouldn't have that if Rollo had never been born. But for now, that's it for this week's episode of Royally Screwed. I hope you enjoyed the journey. Be sure to subscribe to the show and tell a friend all about it. Next time, we're going back to the early Republic period of Rome in order to look at how the role of dictator developed, ranging from the fall of hypothetical kings to a man who has been called history's most virtuous dictator. I hope you'll join me then for another topsy-turvy look into history's most interesting rulers.